We're just about at 2 o'clock, so I'd like to go ahead and get started. My name is Peter Korn. I am Sun's accessibility architect. I have been working in the field of accessibility for about 13 years, and I'd like to talk to you about our ideas and philosophies for open source accessibility, what we're doing, what we see the priorities are, etc. This is adopted from a presentation I gave a few months ago in France. Liberté, égalité, fraternité, the rights of man. You know, these are noble goals of a free and fair society, but when it comes to people with disabilities, we still have a long way to go. Égalité, you know, my computer comes with drivers for my printer, for my keyboard, my digital camera. It doesn't come with drivers for my braille display. Why doesn't it come with drivers for my braille printer or my single switch device? My computer comes ready to send video to my monitor. Why doesn't it come ready to enlarge the print on my monitor for people with limited vision? This notion of égalité really isn't there when we talk about people with disabilities. So to realize égalité, if people with disabilities are to be equal, then computer systems must contain support for them from the outset. Accessibility must be built in, not bolted on. This is why we've defined programmatic accessibility and built it into GNOME, are building it into KDE, are standardizing on it with the free software, the free standards group. This is why GNOPERNICUS and GOK and Dasher, this is what GNOPERNICUS and GOK and Dasher use to provide access on the open desktops, how OpenOffice.org and Mozilla and Evolution are exposing their information through a built-in accessibility architecture. This, I believe, is how we should reach égalité. Liberté. Well, I should have a choice in what computer I use. I shouldn't be limited to, and have a choice in what information technology I interact with. I shouldn't be limited to a specific web browser or a specific application suite, or a specific computer, just because I have a disability. As Aaron said in the opening session, there's been a lot of work historically on Windows, and that's great, and that's what people use today, and that's great, but if I am to have liberté, I should have some choice, and not simply be limited to one platform. Just as I should have choice in what jobs I take, and not be limited to only jobs that have the dominant computing platform as their available computer. So to realize liberté, accessibility must be built into the system and into the building blocks of applications. Accessibility must be part of all applications. It must be a forethought, not an afterthought. And this is why we took great care to make the GNOME accessibility architecture as portable as possible. Why we've built bridges from the Java platform, from Mozilla, and from OpenOffice. And it's why I'm here as a Sun employee whose company is using GNOME to work with the KDE community, because we want this architecture to be as portable as possible and to work as many places as possible. Fraternité. Well, people with disabilities can, should. I must have been under some sort of French influence when I wrote this slide. Should be able to participate in work and life in brotherhood with the rest of society, but we don't have fraternity in a world of web pages that only work on certain browsers, on certain platforms, in a world full of documents that can only be read by certain applications on certain platforms. So to realize this notion of fraternity, accessibility must be in the tools that can fully browse the web. It must be in applications that read the documents everyone else is creating and using. These tools and applications must be available everywhere, not just with proprietary systems controlled by a single company. To realize fraternity, accessibility must be ubiquitous. I really believe that this current work in free and open software is bringing us back to the roots of accessibility. If you think about where we were in the 1970s and 1980s, assistive technologies were things that individual engineers built and did for their friends, for their wives, for their husbands. the example that Aaron cited of the typewriter being developed by an inventor so that his blind wife could write him letters. In the beginning, accessibility was about individual engineers developing solutions for their friends. But in the late 80s and 90s, this became a business, or these projects became businesses. And with the rise of the graphical interface and the off-screen model for blind users, the investment needed to make quality assistive technologies and stuff like Aaron was demonstrating with ZoomText grew dramatically. And with that increase in the required investment, it really limited new companies into the market, and it really placed limits on what you could do in free and open software because it costs so very much to develop such technologies. But with the rise of GNU Linux, of GNOME, KDE, and the accessibility architecture, we are seeing a real change there. Individuals can now make small modifications to existing assistive technologies. For example, people in the Braille TTY community made modifications to GNOPernicus so that GNOPernicus would support the 55 odd Braille displays that Braille TTY uses and to ensure interoperability. We've gotten tremendous contributions from the open source community as far as translations of GNOPernicus and Gawk and Dasher. These assistive technologies, while in some areas in features are lagging behind Windows, are well ahead of Windows when it comes to the number of languages they work in. And that's because of the ability to make contributions to the open source assistive technologies. Companies can move from the shrink wrap model to the Apache model. Instead of buying a $1,300 screen reader for every individual with a disability at your school or at your company, you might instead hire a programmer or a contractor to make some modifications to the existing open source screen reader and get the features that you want. And a wonderful example of this is the Social Security Administration in the United States. They have about 700 employees out of about 70,000 who have a disability. About 500 of them are blind. That's 500 people times $1,300 per copy for JAWS. That's quite a lot of money. For that same amount of money, you could instead have a contract programmer modify GNOPernicus to meet the needs of the Social Security Administration, add the features they want. So this is a new kind of model that is available and being looked at in the open source world that wasn't there before in the commercial world. Well, I think I'm preaching to the choir here when I say why this is so important. There are a lot of people worldwide who need it. There's a growing body of legislation requiring it, and the current offerings are expensive and brittle. As Aaron noted, ZoomText changed the display driver, as does JAWS, as do other products. And these kinds of modifications of a desktop are very, very brittle. Every time the OS revs, the assistive technology breaks and has to be recoded. Every time a new version of Office comes out, they have new techniques that need to be newly special cased, the assistive technologies break and have to be recoded. Whereas if we move to a supported programming interface, then we are insulated from these changes and our systems aren't so brittle. Important statistics. Disabled people are the largest minority group in, for example, the United States. And in the United States, they have a disposable income of roughly $175 billion. There are some 15 million working Americans with disabilities whose employers are legally required to accommodate them. That's through the Americans with Disabilities Act. Nearly 8% of federal employees in the United States have a disability. About 8% of the World Wide Web users have a significant disability. And then, of course, as we age, over half of Americans over 65 years old have a disability. And worldwide, somewhere between 15 and 20% of the worldwide population has a disability. In the US, there are a lot of laws regarding this, Section 508 of the Federal Rehabilitation Act, which Aaron was referring to earlier, states that the federal government shall not purchase information technology that's inaccessible. The Americans with Disabilities Act puts a burden on employers, saying that they must make reasonable accommodation for employees and customers with disabilities. The Individuals with Disabilities and Education Act requires that schools, public schools, place students in the least restrictive environment to accommodate whatever needs they may have due to their disability. And Section 255 of the Telecommunication Act places requirements on telephone handset vendors and carriers regarding accessibility. There's also a growing body of legislation worldwide. Australians Disability Discrimination Act, Canada, Portugal, Germany. We actually have a long list of these that is on our website at developer.gnome.org, projects.gap.laws.html. When you think about the problems that users face in the Windows world today, the assistive technology cost per machine is really quite expensive. Screen readers like JAWS are anywhere between $900 and $1,300 per copy. Screen magnification, the product that Aaron was showing you, is $600. Other assistive technologies have a variety of prices. And you know, when you think about it, in the United States, the people who are blind have, I believe, a 70% unemployment rate, 70. How are people with disabilities who need these products, how are they going to afford them at these prices? It's not something that makes sense for the user community. Deployment is also an issue. You have to generally dedicate a system for a person with a disability to use because of their brittleness. You think about a school. School might have 100 students, of which one is blind, and they've got a computer lab with, say, 10 machines. So they're going to buy JAWS for $1,300 and put it on one of those machines. And then they don't want anyone else to touch it because, well, they might break it. So now 99 students are sharing 9 computers, and one has the JAWS machine. Not very efficient. And then the second blind student enrolls at the school. Well, the ratio gets a little bit better. 98 now are sharing the 9 machines, and 2 are sharing the 1. Until, of course, both blind students have a paper they have to work on at the same time, and then it doesn't work anymore. So really, and we also have the issue of assistive technology upgrades are expensive and frequent. Every time the OS changes or the major applications change, you need a rev of that. But when we look at the open source accessibility architecture, it's got some tremendous benefits, right? When the screen reader and magnifier and on-screen keyboard are all built into the desktop, then the price for the user is great. When the architecture is a supported architecture, you move away from the brittleness that we have today in Windows. Some interesting possibilities with text-to-speech and speech recognition could be a client-server based, where you've got a bigger server somewhere doing some of the heavy lifting. And finally, from the user's point of view, we can have the same end-user solution, be it on Linux or Solaris or NetBSD, AIX, if IBM is still doing anything with that, HPUX, and so on. So this is very nice from a user point of view. So looking back over the last few years, we've had quite a few accomplishments in the open source accessibility world. We've got very nice blind console access with products like SpeakUp and BrailleTTY, which is actually in some distros already. The concept of accessibility has been embraced by the GNOME, KDE, and X communities. The implementation is a little uneven, but the very fact that we've got an accessibility forum here at the KDE conference says an awful lot about the interest and commitment to accessibility that we're seeing at KDE. keyboard navigation and theming in GNOME and in Java is very nice. I can't speak so much for KDE. I trust that that'll be covered more in the next session, just because I'm not a KDE expert. But my understanding is that those have come along very nicely as well in KDE. We have a definition of an accessibility architecture, an ATSPI, which is implemented in GNOME, is coming in KDE. We have it in Java with the Java Accessibility API, and that's implemented in Swing. It's actually also implemented by Oracle in two of their custom UI toolkits. Accessibility in StarOffice 7 or OpenOffice 1.1 is mostly there. There are a number of high-profile bugs that we still need to fix. It's in development for Mozilla and Evolution. We're still struggling with a lot of issues we need to iron out there before those are ready. We have English text-to-speech that is free and open source with Festival, Flight, and free TTS. We have very, very early development work of English speech recognition in Sphinx 4, which was at Alpha 1 a few months ago. We might have hit Alpha 2 in the last few months. We're getting about 10,000 word recognition faster in Sphinx 4 than it was in Sphinx 3, which is shipping. So the new algorithms in Sphinx are looking very attractive. Question from Aaron.
Is that notification thing?
So the question is that more of a dictation thing, or is that mouse replacement? Sphinx is a recognition engine. It's not an end-user product. So the recognition engine is has both dictation models as well as finite state grammars for command and control. But it's just a building block. We need an end-user or multiple end-user applications that would sit on top of that engine. For you to have a drag and dictate like product. AccessX is in many, if not most, distros, so all of the keyboard features that Aaron mentioned in his previous session, sticky keys, mouse keys, bounce keys, and so on, are present. The GNOPERNICUS screen reader screen magnifier is a core part of GNOME 2, starting with 2.4. Though it's not yet at what we would call 1.0 or shipping quality, it is already part of GNOME. The GNOME on-screen keyboard is also core to GNOME, again starting with 2.4. We wouldn't call that 1.0 yet either, but it's really close. Dasher is a really interesting on-screen keyboard input alternative. I can give you a demonstration of that later if we have time, which it looks like we will. And actually, I think I'm on tap for doing that tomorrow. So you'll see that more tomorrow. And that's core to GNOME, starting with GNOME 2.6. X-Fixes, Damage are two key extensions that are needed for decent magnification. And those extensions are in the X.org tree. They're used by GNOME Mag and GNOPERNICUS for screen magnification. We've just recently gotten support for accessible login and gesture recognition in GNOME, in GDM for login. What this means is that you can come up to one of these desktops, make a gesture, that gesture is mapped to launching an assistive technology. And that way you can get it. Gestures can be mouse gestures, keyboard gestures, insertion of a smart card, waving a proximity card nearby, any of a variety of things. The way the architecture works is the system administrator configures the system to load some number of gesture listeners. These gesture listeners then do whatever it is they want to do, and we're going to include a couple default ones for launching GNOPERNICUS and Goth in various modes. And then, when the user makes the gesture, it launches the assistive technology. So this then is how a user can come up to a system at a library or some other public system and immediately get their assistive technology running even before they've logged in. We also have something called Login Helper, which is part of a new API for applications like Screen Unlock Dialogues to discover that an assistive technology is running and have a little negotiation with that assistive technology in order to know that, okay, even though I'm trying to lock the screen, we need the assistive technology to run and get events, because how else is the user going to type in their password if all they have is a single switch device and you're looking for keyboard input? And we've also gotten standardization work is now underway under the Free Standards Group umbrella, which I believe Yanina is talking about tomorrow. There's still an awful lot we have to do before we're done. This is a partial list. It's actually a few months out of date, and there's a longer list that we generated at the GUADEC conference a couple months ago.
We should find some time to review with this group in the next day.
It's a good idea. Yanina suggests that we should actually try to review the most recent list with this group. I can perhaps assign that as homework because the list is up on my webpage. So I'll give that URL out in a minute. So a draft list of what's missing. Building blocks, we still need good text-to-speech in languages other than English. And I'd certainly like the open source text-to-speech that we have to improve in quality. The voice is a bit lacking. We need to finish the speech recognition building blocks that we have in English and extend that to other languages. On the assistive technology side, we're missing desktop dictation software and voice command and control software. Our screen reader needs to have scripting. There's functionality missing in our magnifier. It's nowhere near the level of functionality that you see in the Premiere Windows product, ZoomText. On the architecture side, we don't have accessible PDF on our platform. We don't have accessible SVG on our platform. We need better support for SMILE, synchronized multimedia. I forget what the IL stand for, Yanina?
Integration
language. Actually, I've got some good news on the SMILE front. Helix Player 1.0 supports SMILE. And Helix Player 1.0.1, if they fix the bugs that I've sent them, ought to be fairly accessible. There are just a couple of problems I discovered that we need to fix. Flash accessibility, while Macromedia has an accessibility effort underway for Flash that's geared almost exclusively to Windows, it's not particularly API-based, and so we need to get that fixed. MathML is a really nice markup language for mathematics. We need to get that folded into accessibility so that we can produce good speech and braille output when parsing MathML content. Question, yes.
To the MathML?
Yeah.
I have some contact to an Austrian developer that are working on MathML, and I think they have been connected to the University of Lyon, that made some style sheets for converting MathML to some special braille things and such things. So perhaps it's...
Great. So the gentleman's saying that he has some connections to a gentleman in Austria who has been working on MathML and University of Lyon style sheets to make that more accessible. Let me talk to you afterward about that.
That's an important piece of the contact for the DAISY consortium, which is looking to add support for math in the DAISY specifications, which support plugins. So.
Yanina points out that that's important for the DAISY consortium.
Okay, actively working on that.
Aaron, are you working on DAISY or Alpha or me? Are you working on DAISY or?
No, where? DAISY content within Mozilla, for example.
Oh, okay.
Is that what you're asking?
Yes.
No, Mozilla is not.
So the question is.
Okay.
What's the status of DAISY in Mozilla? And the answer is, it isn't. So what we still need to do, KDE Qt Accessibility, we need to finish that work and get that shipping. Mozilla and Evolution Accessibility work, we need to finish that and get that shipping. We need better distro support. We should look at having our own accessible distros. And actually, we discovered in the last few months three different efforts at putting accessible distros together. Oralux is one. Yanina, you may remember the other two. Onsa has put one together that goes into GNOME with Gnopernicus and speaks in Spanish. And there's a third one, but I forget what it is. We need to look at things like Grub, you know? We need to have some way for blind people to get low-level, get access when they're working at a lower level, like at Grub or at the installer. Oh, good. Yanina has some stuff to show us there. Internationalization support. While the user interface for things like Gnopernicus and Gox have been localized to many more languages than the commercial products in Windows have been, we still, as I mentioned, don't have text-to-speech in all of those languages. We don't have Braille grade 2 translators for all of those languages. We don't have good mechanisms for using Gawk as an input method in, for example, Chinese or Japanese or other Indic languages and so on. We need an open source DAISY reader. And while there's a project to do this, on SourceForge, the AMIS project. We've yet to actually see any binaries come out of that any of us can test. There are a couple of contentions between Gnopernicus.
Could you explain in one sentence what DAISY is?
Oh, sure. I'll attempt to explain in one sentence what DAISY is, and then Yanina will correct me. So, DAISY is a project. And the DAISY project goal is both an XML file format for marking up books for the print impaired, as well as the creation of products and libraries of material in this format for people to use. So a DAISY book can be marked up audio snippets, or it could be the text to then be generated by a speech synthesizer. A marked up audiobook in DAISY format is a book that you can easily enumerate the chapters, jump to various sections, so on and so forth. How'd I do, Yanina?
Pretty good.
Great. Yanina thinks I did well. We've got some contentions with the existing good screen access solutions for the blind on the console and the GUI screen reading solutions. We need these solutions to work hand in glove with each other. And right now it's sort of left hand, right hand, which don't always know what the other is doing. And we have a lot of testing and bug fixing to do. So that concludes my first presentation. I actually have a fair amount of time left and another presentation I would like to slip in. So let me bring that up here. So I think that we've actually got a lot of challenges ahead of us in terms of making free and open source accessibility a reality. So I want to talk about some history, the funding models that we have in place today in the United States and Europe, the incentives, and what are some of our future funding options. As I mentioned in my previous presentation, assistive technology started really as small hacks from individuals for use by other individuals. And then over time, assistive technologies became general use products with companies forming around them. Some of the really big problems in access, GUI access, eye gaze, tactile stuff, those things were developed generally by government research funding. And certainly much, if not most, assistive technologies are purchased by governments, not really end users. And that's in large part because it's too expensive for end users to do so. If you look at the existing funding models, the United States Department of Rehab pays for a lot of the assistive technology software and hardware in the United States. Individual companies will pay, will have it paid for by their employers. And this is the undue burden clause in the Americans with Disabilities Act. Actually, I believe it's the reasonable accommodation clause. I have that wrong. In the Netherlands and Denmark, in some of the other countries in Europe, the government generally pays for all of the assistive technology costs for users, as well as the training costs. In Germany, companies who don't hire employees with disabilities are taxed, and that tax then pays for the assistive technology that is used by the employers that do hire someone with a disability. So as I understand the formula, for every 25 employees that your company has, you're ideally supposed to have one with a disability working for you. And if you don't, then you pay a bit of money to a fund. For those companies that do, that fund then buys the Braille readers and the other products that are needed. So in a lot of countries, this is the model. And if you know of other models, well, as I say here, please help this poor American out. And I may be getting some help in the fourth row.
But in the German system, there's a big logical gap, because if all disabled people would have work, there wouldn't be enough no money for the accessible software and hardware. So yeah, it's not the best solution. I think it's only a solution to getting started, but not a real solution if we want the disabled people
were all. Yeah, the gentleman points out that there's a very deep flaw in the German system. It sort of assumes that a large number of people with disabilities won't be employed, because otherwise you won't have any money in this fund. Aaron also had a comment.
I like the only lottery that
the onset.
Oh yes, yes, yes. Another model to look at is the Spain model. Which is focused, unfortunately, only on the blind. It doesn't really address other disabilities. But in Spain, one of the three national lotteries, ONCE, the blind organization, has a concession to one of the three national lotteries, so that if you want to play the lottery in Spain, there's a good chance the blind guy on the corner will sell you a lottery ticket that funds the purchase of assistive technologies, and education, and training for blind people throughout Spain. So yeah, that's another existing model. But there's some interesting aspects of these funding models, especially in the United States. You see that the US government sort of winds up paying twice, once for the deep research and initial creation, and then a second time through the Department of Rehab to buy it. Private individuals are generally unable to afford this stuff. And as I mentioned, most people with disabilities are unemployed. Outside of the US, in Germany, we see that the commercial industry is taxed, so they sort of pay for it once. But I believe that a number of the Braille approaches and other technologies in Germany and in Europe were again received initial government funding for their development. We also have some carrots, some incentives. In the United States, Section 508, US companies are working very, very hard to make their desktops and other products accessible. This is what Sun is doing with the GNOME accessibility leadership, Microsoft with UI automation, Apple with their talking interface and magnifier. We've also seen now an explosion of commercial web accessibility checking tools. it seems there's a dozen companies that want to charge you $1,000+ for a tool that will tell you your web page is broken. Well, this is an incentive. You know, this is a carrot that's getting people into this field. And another incentive in the United States is IDEA, the Individuals with Disabilities in Education Act, which requires schools to purchase assistive technologies. So this is some incentive for the creation and development.
Way to fund LTSP?
We also have some sticks, some mandates. Employers must pay for accommodation when it isn't, as long as it's a reasonable accommodation. Please strike undue burden from this slide. But there's no real incentive for corporations to do this. It's just a requirement upon them. Similarly, Section 255 of the Telecommunications Act in America is a requirement. Telephones must be accessible. This is meant generally that wireless and cell phones are compatible with hearing aids. It's had some effect on handset manufacturing, but not a lot to date in the United States. So why is Sun here? Well, we're here in part because we believe in it. I've met with a lot of senior Sun executives, and they do believe in the importance of accessibility. We're here in as big a way as we are because of Section 508 and other laws. There's no question about it. Our effort on accessibility began before 508, but it grew substantially after 508. Sun's work is all free and open source for several reasons. One is we believe in free and open source software, and increasingly more and more of Sun's technology is going this way. You may have heard about some high profile announcements that Sun is going to open source Solaris, for example. OpenOffice is another fine example of a very large technology that Sun brought to the open source community. We're also not looking to compete based on unique access solutions. You know, we're not trying to compete with Novell or IBM and saying our products are accessible and theirs aren't. That's just not our approach. We want a company, which is we want company. we are keen to have others working in accessibility alongside us, and to build a community around open source accessibility, and to see that this becomes a real viable alternative platform for accessibility, so that the Windows stops being the only game in town. One of my concerns, and what I'm spending increasing amounts of my time on, is what happens after we reach enough. We haven't reached enough yet. Aaron suggests that we're 3 years behind Windows. Earlier in this session, I put forth a long list of things that we have yet to accomplish. But at some point, we'll get there. I really believe that. And then what's going to happen? Users will be functional and effective on the desktop when we reach this enough, whatever exactly it is. U.S. agencies will be comfortable purchasing it under Section 508. Other governments in Europe and elsewhere will be comfortable. But good enough isn't necessarily the same thing as excellent or satisfying. Is a screen reader require scripting to reach good enough? I don't know. Do we have to reach full feature parity with a $1,300 Windows product in order to be good enough? I don't know. Do we need a full wealth of tools? I mean, on Windows, there are many screen reader choices. I certainly don't think good enough requires that we have that plethora. I'm worried and I'm concerned about funding after we reach good enough. Where can we go to get funding for free and open source accessibility, both now as well as after we reach this good enough stage? One idea is the Apache model. Companies who would otherwise pay $1,300 for their screen readers for their employees might instead contribute to an open source screen reader effort. Government agencies, likewise. I think we need to push for government grants to be biased toward open source solutions, because really that's a better benefit to taxpayers, since the government gets out of the business of paying twice. For universities, I think there's a lot of interesting options around free and open source accessibility and technology transfer. There's great research in universities for alternate user interfaces. And to the extent that we can channel that work toward accessibility, we've got a lot of interesting options. But I think we need to start a dialogue about funding models for open source accessibility and coming up with models that really work well for us. So that summarizes my prepared slides. I'm happy to take questions. I'm also happy to use the remaining 10, 15, 20 minutes for a brief demo, although I know we're going to go into more detail on both Copernicus, Gok, and Dasher tomorrow. I don't know if everyone will be here tomorrow, and so I'm happy to follow the whim of the audience. So, any questions? Okay, yes.
Well, at some risk, let me make a comment relative to your last point about sort of mainstreaming the accessibility issues. It's become a truism in the X and the desktop community that they have exactly those needs over the next few years to make a competitive, better than a competitive desktop. It seems to me that if there's some way of doing it, accessibility has the same goal. In other words, you also wish to have a superior solution. And I don't see why the two interests shouldn't be better integrated rather than seen as simply two separate aspects of the same goal. I think it could be to everyone's advantage.
So the gentleman's, I think, pointing out that we've got a lot of common interests and goals with open source communities such as the X community. And it would make sense for us to, as much as we can, work together. Fair summary?
Well, even more pointed is that it's been frequently stated in meetings, not only the X, but both of the desktop groups.
Here. Apparently we don't have a roving mic that works.
It's been stated frequently in meetings, both of X and desktop, even at the kernel meetings or the desktop meeting at in Ottawa, that the free desktop is not going to succeed unless it undergoes major changes within the next 3 to 5 years. It seems to me both the issues that you presented and the issues that the desktop community has for open source overall are really two parts of the same goal, and they probably should be looked at that way.
Good point. Other questions? Yes?
I just wanted to remind you to show the URL of your to-do list.
The URL of my to-do list. The to-do list that I have is actually in my most recent, which is to say somewhat aged, blog entry. So this is, I guess, also a slight plug for my blog. And that is blogs.sun.com/corn, K-O-R-N. And there you'll find the to-do list that we generated at the GuadEC conference. So I've got about 10, 15 minutes left. Show of hands, would you like me to give a brief overview of GNOME accessibility? Yeah, okay. Well, let me show you what we have then. So this is my GNOME desktop, and key accessibility features include the fact that I can do everything from the keyboard, so bringing up the launch menu, moving about on it from the keyboard, In here we have accessibility preferences, and one of those preferences is keyboard preferences. If, for example, I have very limited physical mobility, I can't type with more than one finger. Maybe I'm using a mouth stick, so I've got something like a pencil in my mouth. I'm brushing the keys one at a time that way. Well, if that's what I'm doing, it makes it very, very difficult for me to type a capital S. Right? I press Shift and then S, and well, I'm not getting a capital S. So this is sticky keys. Five presses of the Shift key turns it on. And now I can type my capital S. Or Control Alt Tab or what have you. Alt Tab, switching applications just with a single finger. Questions?
Yes. I'm almost hearing what we are typing, and I'm wondering if there is the same system as on a mobile phone, where I only have nine buttons to press, but I want to write it very fast, so I use this T9 system. So the computer guesses the recent words I have typed, or the most
right.
words we have. Is it the same system there?
No, this is a different system. A T9 input system is certainly an option. We don't have a T9 input system for the graphical desktop that I'm aware of, but one could certainly build that. We have a number of other things which I will show you, which, you know, given that T9 makes a lot of sense when what you have is a 9 or 12 key keyboard, but since most desktop users have a lot more than that, T9 isn't necessarily the optimal mechanism to use on the desktop.
Okay, but I only was thinking about the using a dictionary for guessing the words that I want to type.
Yeah, I'll show you some of that.
Okay, that's great.
So similarly, if I've got a different problem, if I have Parkinson's disease, something else where my hands are rather tremorous, right? With tremored hands, if I want to type text, well, I wind up typing a bunch of things accidentally en route to the key that I want to type. So instead, what we can do is we can say, look, I want to turn slow keys on and only accept a keystroke if it's been held down for a certain time period, in this case, 300 milliseconds. And now, you know, I'm typing a bunch of stuff here, but it's only the key that I held down for a while that came through, the letter Y. So that's another aspect of keyboard accessibility. Bounce keys is for people who, in their tremor, sometimes hit the key a couple of times on their way up, and that will reject multiple key presses in that situation. So that's the basic set of keyboard accessibility features that we have in the GNOME desktop. Similarly, I've got theming support for a variety of mild to medium vision impairments, and that's over here in the display options. So if so you see my desktop here in the background. If I go to a high contrast theme, all of my icons change. So now my computer icon, and my hard drive icon, and my Star Office icon, they're much more legible for someone with mild vision impairments. Again, compare it to what they look like by default. And you can immediately see how, at the back of the room, this is much clearer. Question?
So this requires that the artist has also given extra icons.
Right. This requires custom icons.
It's nothing that just does it automatically.
Does it automatically? No. No. This is one aspect of extra work. Similarly, I've got a high contrast inverse. Here, it is a separate icon, but it's trivial to create. I also have a large print theme, and when I apply the font, you'll notice now that most of the desktop is bigger, my icons are bigger, and so on. So this is for people with mild to medium vision impairments. So let me turn this back off. I actually have fairly exquisite control over the text size. If you look over here in desktop display, oops, let's try this again. The font control panel allows me to say not only what is the application text font size, but the desktop text font size, the terminal text font size, the window manager text font size. So this kind of exquisite control is very, very useful. And then we have the assistive technologies that I'm going to give you only the briefest taste of now, because we go into them in more detail tomorrow. But for example, here I have the screen reader screen magnifier called Gnopernicus. Is that, can you hear that without me putting a mic to it?
Preferences, push button, shortcut, auto, available.
And what you're hearing is the open source free TTS voice, which isn't particularly human sounding. It's also not as fast as we would like. And you're actually hearing it with two different settings. You're hearing a somewhat higher pitched voice, which is reading me the text that's being shown on the screen, and then a lower pitched voice that's sort of describing the object in question.
Three default references, push button, shortcut on free available.
And I'm also getting in my software Braille display on the top of the screen the information that would be rendered in Braille in dots. And then finally, the right half of the screen is doing my magnification. And so if I go over here to the launch menu.
Logout card, menu, this computer, application, access, archive, text editor, menu, switch to window, no turning, rename window, jet, rename window, and title on jet.
So now you see that it's following what I'm doing. And one of the very important things about a screen reader is it should shut up and start speaking something new very, very quickly. Aaron said it's like looking through a mail slot. My analogy is it's like looking through a straw. You want to be able to place the straw somewhere new on the screen very, very quickly, and you want to be able to suck as much through that straw as quickly as you can, because that's your view of the world. And you'll notice that as I type, the magnifier is tracking the location of the caret. You'll also notice on my software Braille display that the letter that the caret is on is indented. That's to give me a visual indication that in Braille that would be shown as dots 7 and 8. So this is the screen reader screen magnifier Gnopernicus. It has a lot of features that I'm not going to go into now. It doesn't have as many features as JAWS, or as many features as the Zoom Text Magnifier. This is part of the good enough question that I was asking earlier. So the other assistive technology that, or one of the other ones I wanted to show you, is the GNOME on-screen keyboard. This is a really neat assistive technology. And this is for people with severe physical impairments. This is what a typical on-screen keyboard looks like. It's keyboard. And so if I have a very severe physical impairment, let's say all I can do is shrug my shoulder, how do I control a computer if all I can do is shrug my shoulder? Well, I can attach a switch on my wheelchair to my shoulder, and then I can press that switch, and that switch starts the system scanning. And when it's on the row that I want, I press it again, and then a third time when it's on the button that I want. And now I've pressed and latched the control key. And now I can press and latch the escape key, and that brings up my launch menu. And then I could arrow and then I could arrow, and then I could arrow, and then I could space bar, and finally select something off of that menu, which is really slow and painful. But that's how Windows on-screen keyboards work today in the Macintosh on-screen keyboard. Aaron said that we're about 3 years behind Windows. You really can't make such a broad statement because that hides too much of the richness of the true situation. This on-screen keyboard is about 3 years ahead of Windows. And that's because it is taking advantage of the rich API that we have that isn't there yet in Windows and isn't really there yet in Macintosh. So for example, the first thing I should do is maybe have a custom keyboard of applications that I want to launch, because I can launch those a lot faster, like I've just launched the help browser. And having launched the help browser, you know, maybe I'd like to follow a hyperlink. Well, you know, I could do this by coming down here to tab. And now you'll notice there's a dotted line around the first hyperlink. And coming down here to tab. And now I want to select that one. So I come down here to spacebar. Wait for it. Wait for it. Got it! And now I've got my hyperlink. Well, that's, you know, if this is your only ability to control a computer, you know, now you have access. But it's pretty slow and painful. Wouldn't it make much more sense if I could just say, look, there's a bunch of stuff on this user interface that I want to grab. So let me grab it. And here are all the hyperlinks on the keyboard. And now I can go directly to the GNOME on-screen keyboard manual. And up it came. And I want to read, you know, section 3. So I'm just going to come down here to section 3 and choose it. And up it comes. And it would be nice to scroll this window. So I'm just going to go over here to the vertical scroll bar. And I'm going to say, let's turn repeating on. And let's now start scrolling downward, please. And it's slowly scrolling. I got to the section I want. Let me read that. So this is the GNOME on-screen keyboard. Pretty cool, huh? So the last quick taste I want to give you is of something called Dasher. Let me first get rid of this on-screen keyboard. So I have to go to the dock menu and then choose quit. And this is one of the few times when you really want a really quick confirmation. Because once you're out of it, you're out of it. All right, so let me bring up Dasher. So if you have a very, if you have a very severe physical impairment, maybe all you can do is move your head or move your eyes. Well, I can get about a $1,000 camera that will look at a dot on my forehead and know where my head is moving, or a $5,000 camera that will look at the reflectiveness of my pupil and therefore map that to a mouse. If I map that to a mouse, then I can start looking at text. So somebody shout out a word for me.
KDE.
KDE. That's not a word.
Rules.
Accessibility.
Accessibility. So I go over here to the letter A. And you'll notice now that the letter A has appeared up here in the text. And now, inside this box of the letter A, is a whole new alphabet. So I'm going to go over here to the letter C. Access, ACC. According is much more popular than access. ACCE, SSI, B. Boy, it was not trained on somebody who knew about accessibility. Ah, there we are, accessibility. And there we have the word. And this is an alternative way for somebody who can do nothing but move their head or eyes to enter text, roughly 35 words per minute, or faster they've seen. Pretty amazing. Pretty neat. And when this is running on a desktop with the accessibility architecture, and I only just built this code last night, because this is a new machine. Let's turn on control mode. And turn on enter text into other windows. Now I have a new thing called control. Let me go into applications and menus. I'm going to go into the Dasher menu. And over here in the file menu of Dasher is the save as command. And so just by moving my eyes now, I get to save as, and up comes the dialog box, which I can then manipulate only by moving my eyes. This is core to GNOME, starting in GNOME 2.6. And you can't do this on Windows. So are we 3 years behind? Well, in some ways. But in other ways, we're actually ahead. So I think that's pretty much come to the end of my hour. So I should turn it over now to the next speaker. But thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your talk. The next talk will be by Harald, just now. Okay.